I'm Alexander Heffner, your host on The Open Mind. I'm delighted to welcome to our broadcast today Matt Stoller. He, of course, is author of Goliath, The 100-Year War Between Monopoly Power and Democracy, and he is research director at the American Economic Liberties Project. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Matt, do you think that there's a genuine opportunity for bipartisanship in modern-day trust-busting with the Biden administration?
Yeah, you've already seen it. This is sort of a strange view because, you know, people assume that there is no bipartisanship, that the parties hate each other, which in many ways they do. But the Trump administration brought a major antitrust suit against Google, which is supported by Democrats. So it's likely, you know, Biden can do something very similar. It will be, you know, he'd just keep the suit going or expand it. And that's, you know, do the same thing with Facebook. And I think that you'll see support from both sides of the aisle. I actually, the one thing that it makes me somewhat optimistic is I think Biden is a much better candidate and potential politician than most Democrats and progressives think. He is, Kamala's not, but Biden actually has sort of a weird populist streak. And he often ignores progressives and Twitter, which is good. They just did their own thing, which was good. So maybe it's possible that he, you know, actually does some things to improve people's lives. I mean, he's going to be, I think, much better than the Obama administration, which is way worse than people assumed. So it's quite possible that Biden actually delivers. And, you know, that will be like pretty unexpected to a lot of, to most people, because they don't expect anything different from Biden. But there's been a lot of learning that's taken place within the Democratic establishment. It's quietly over the last 4 years. So that's definitely a possibility. And I wouldn't discount that when we're thinking about what the Democrats might do. So Biden could, if he does a good job governing, he could realign the country in a way that we might not expect.
And this expansive suit ideally would have the effect of demonopolizing not just one industry, but the intersection of many industries as they've preserved their monopoly power over a decade plus.
Right. I mean, you bringing back and restoring antitrust law would have a really important impact on the structure of the economy. So I think the main change that's happened in the economy over the last 30 years is that corporate concentration monopoly isn't an anomaly anymore, but it's a systemic feature in every market, big and small. You can look at, you know, cable or telecom or search engines, but you can also look at, you know, peanut butter or cheerleading or pool supplies. And monopolization has a host of impacts in terms of inequality and liberty and all sorts of other political values that we tend not to associate with our business with how we do business. But in fact, a lot of the problems that we're seeing in our culture are driven upstream by the monopolization in the business world. And so, you know, if you actually start to attack the problem of monopolization, then you will end up solving a bunch of other problems that people often assume are unrelated.
Is there potential with legislation?
There is potential with legislation. So the House Antitrust Subcommittee said, you know, they came out with this report after doing a 16-month investigation where they went through a couple million documents and looked at the large technology firms. But that was sort of a way of looking at the whole political economy, not just big tech, but they looked at big tech because those are kind of the pace setters of our economy. So every other company's trying to imitate the business models of big tech. So anyway, they did a long investigation, which was bipartisan. I mean, there were some Republicans that didn't like it. And then they came out with a report and recommended wholesale changes to antitrust laws, as well as laws that would just break up big tech, just, you know, and regulate them. So these wouldn't be antitrust laws. They would just be a legislative breakup. And the Republicans on the subcommittee split into two groups. There was the Jim Jordan, who was pretty hostile to the whole endeavor. And then there was Ken Buck in a group of Republicans who essentially accepted the claims of the report in terms of like what the problems were, but then said, we don't want to do quite as much as the Democrats, but here are some things we want to do. We want to make some changes to merger law. We want to make some changes to monopolization law so that, you know, the agencies can actually bring more cases and block more anti-competitive mergers. So, you know, even though it's going to be a very narrow Congress, there's a potential for legislative changes. I do think that it's only potential. I mean, Mitch McConnell is going to be pretty hostile to these changes. And so, you know, we'll see what happens in the Senate. The Republicans in the Senate, you know, I think there's more appetite and openness to this than for other areas, but it is only potential right now. I wouldn't be confident. Well, I think there's going to be a case against Facebook, and I think that they're going to expand the case against Google. I'm not confident in saying that they're going to definitely move legislation through Congress. They might. I just am not confident.
The political ramifications of that suit and potential Biden-Harris activity against monopolies could be a real plus in helping the party. What would be your advice to President-elect Biden on how this can become an issue that makes the Democrats more compelling and authentic on their desire to, you know, treat people with dignity? Because trust busting sounds like a sort of legal notion, but in fact, if you do that, it can have some economic results that are good for regular people, for real people.
Right. So, you know, it basically, corporate America is on a crime spree, and they're stealing your money. And they're stealing our wages. That's what's happening in our economy. It's what's been happening for 30, 40 years, and it continues to get worse. It's pretty easy to explain that if you just say, look, the reason you have a $10,000 hospital bill is because they're stealing from you. It's not actually $10,000 for whatever it is that they're doing for you. They're able to take that money because, you know, they've monopolized the markets and it's theft. And so we're going to stop that because you shouldn't have to pay that money. Or, you know, you don't have the option to leave your job because the company that you work for bought up all the rivals where you might be able to go work. And that's just theft. Your wages are lower than they would otherwise be. Like, you can talk about that, you know, and if Biden does, it will work. And you can also, you know, Trump talked about it. I mean, that you know, and Biden should also get really tough on China and just be like, they're screwing us, because it's true. And, you know, the this stuff isn't that hard, but I think that there's a basic problem that if we're talking about the Democrats, what they have is they can't admit that they screwed up. And I think that's the biggest problem that Democrats have, is that from Bill Clinton onward, the Democrats have screwed the American people. And I'm just going to be really straightforward, and I'm a Democrat, but they've screwed the American people. Like, Reagan did too, Bush did too, but that doesn't excuse the Democrats. And like, the political problem that this presents, and, you know, for example, I'll just give you a couple of examples. You know, we know about the derivatives deregulation, and we know about, you know, the Glass-Steagall, and we know about what Obama did with the foreclosure crisis. But, you know, Bill Clinton, it was under Bill Clinton that Walmart put stores in every state, and Walmart sort of destroyed all of these communities. It was under Bill Clinton that the opioid stuff, you know, the really got started. And then it was under Obama that lifespans of Americans actually started going down. And that's like, you know, that's really bad. That's really bad stuff. And so we've been in this cultural crisis for a long time, and Democrats have been knee deep in it. And Democrats right now still think of themselves as sort of beloved and trusted in the party of the people. And they are not perceived that way by like ordinary voters. They are they're seen as sort of just as corrupt. Not among their base, but it's like the Republican base thinks of Trump as awesome, and the Democratic base thinks of their leaders as awesome. But among like most voters, it's just two parties, both of whom are not actually really delivering anything. And Obamacare was a disaster. And like, we have to start being honest about that. It was a mess. And that's why people are, you know, doing GoFundMes to raise money for their surgeries. It's because it didn't deliver, right? And that, like, that's true with Dodd-Frank. It's just like everything that Democrats tried during the Obama administration was a disaster. And so you have to start by saying, look, we're going to do things differently. We recognize that what we did before, maybe it was well-meaning, but it didn't actually deliver. And we're going to change the way that we've been operating.
I don't think it was a refusal to be bolder or more imaginative to solve the problems. I mean, you'll recall that it was Joe Lieberman and one or two other Democratic senators who prevented there from being a bona fide public option.
No, but the public option is a cipher. Like, it's a distraction. Like, the problem with Obamacare was in the very conception of, you know, the same time as you had Obamacare, to expand coverage. You know, they also allowed a roll-up of hospitals, right? A massive hospital merger, a massive set of mergers among generic and branded pharmaceutical makers, a massive set of mergers among pharmaceutical benefits managers. You know, the debate, the healthcare debate in 2009-10 was pretty stupid. And it's something that we haven't like dealt with. Give an example, like, I don't mean to jump down your throat because I know you're not saying that. So, but I'm responding to the voices in my head. In 2008, the average family of four who was insured paid around $15,000 in total costs for healthcare coverage in, you know, insurance and everything else, copays and whatever. Today, it's about $30,000, right? That's like a pretty nice car, right, every year. And that's a result of, it's not because people are getting better care or, you know, it's completely a result of pricing power. And that pricing power is because hospitals can price gouge and insurance companies, not actually as important really. It's really the hospitals that are doing a lot of price gouging. And that's something that the Obama administration didn't try to address. Actually, Trump went after it more aggressive than Obama did with just price transparency rules. So it's like, if we can't even admit that Obamacare sucks, like, then how are we supposed to actually like make it better?
Right. I think you're spot on in identifying that it's not triangulation that Clinton and Obama years perpetuated. It was fundamentally a oligarchic, plutocratic, what I've termed cannibalistic, capitalistic, monopolistic underlying to satisfy the egos and greed of the system. And you've pointed out on Twitter quite articulately that Speaker Pelosi and Leader Schumer for the Democrats are just not the people you want to embody a message for economic relief. And that's where I get back to the raw politics of this. You know about the hostility from the corporatist Republicans. We know the corporatist Supreme Court would likely strike down, you know, any major overhaul that was going to put a dent in corporate profits. Where does it leave Biden to seek a partnership with the folks of like Cicilline on the House side? Because you need a partner in the Senate who's not Chuck Schumer, because Chuck Schumer lives and breathes from the same plutocratic interest that you describe in the failure of the Obama administration.
Yeah, I mean, I worked in Congress for a while, and I don't think it's a triangulation issue. And I largely the arguments about boldness or the left versus the center, I used to buy into a lot of that, and I don't anymore. I think that's just like fighting over lifestyle brands. I don't think there's anything real to it. The problem was intellectual. I mean, what Bill Clinton did, and the progressives sort of didn't really oppose this very much, and they helped in a lot of ways. What Bill Clinton and Barack Obama did is they said, we're going to move tens of thousands of American factories to China because we don't think that doing that kind of work is meaningful. And that was their strategy. And we're going to allow corporations to consolidate because we think that if you have a lot of big companies doing things, that they're more efficient than small companies. And that's what their strategy is. And these are fundamentally un-American ideas that we've never done this before. And then Bush was part of it and Reagan was part of it. It was Reagan started it and Clinton globalized it and Bush, you know, supercharged that and Obama didn't change it. But like, that's basically what happened. And it isn't, you know, Pelosi and Schumer, these are bit players. The problem we have now is there is no coherent opposition to this. You have some, you know, progressives like Pramila Jayapal and David Cicilline who are sort of proposing a different model with the House Antitrust Subcommittee. But mostly the progressives are obsessed with like, you know, edgy attempts to get attention through dumb slogans that don't mean anything. And so I'm not sure what to do about it, except that I think that, you know, I'm a progressive, but progressives have been a complete failure in every part of this, in everything from just imagining that the only problem was a public option to, you know, the Progressive Caucus was more in favor of the bailouts in 2008 than any other caucus. And they did the same thing during the CARES Act this time. We are not who we assume we are. We are not people who oppose corporate power. That is not what we do. And I wish it were what we do. But in order to get there, we have to admit that. We have to like say, oh, wait a second. We have to center our politics around making things and helping people be free and to doing business how they want to do business, as opposed to the way that we've structured it now, where you have monopolization and greed and fraud, you know, denoting our economic order. But that takes real work to do that. And that's why the House Antitrust Subcommittee was so important. If you want to do this, right, you have to go through lots and lots and lots of documents. You have to do real work. So just to sort of finish this up, it's like, if progressives were for real, they would have a position on what to do about Boeing, because Boeing is a very obvious catastrophe, but they don't. They don't even talk about it. They don't even know it exists, right? It's just, oh, Boeing, that's a thing that's bad, right? But that's actually a really important company that makes airplanes, which is one of our few remaining really powerful exports. And you've seen no action there because Democrats and progressives don't actually think about the structure of our economy at a micro level, but they should.
Where does the Biden administration leave the folks who have admitted to some of what you describe, the Sanders contingent of the party, where does this administration leave the people who had been somewhat honest about what the real interests of the Democratic Party have been over the last decade?
I'm going to reject the premise. I don't think that Sanders has been remotely honest about the problem, and I don't think he's admitted that there are any issues whatsoever. I do not see any value right now in the progressive side of the aisle. They haven't admitted it. They pretend like everything they've done is perfect, and it's not true.
You don't think any Democrat is honest about what you're describing?
No, No, I think Cicilline has actually come out with them, and Pramila, in their report, they were like, look, a lot of what happened was screw ups under the Obama administration with merger enforcement. That's honest. But, you know, just saying, oh, we need to like pay people $15 an hour. Jeff Bezos should pay people $15 billion or $15 an hour. Like, that's charity. That's not liberty. And like, it's time to just drop this whole dumb model. And I also think progressives need to grow up and stop pretending like their lifestyle brand is a real political agenda. I mean, it's embarrassing. You know, with a real political agenda carries power, but faced with the biggest pandemic in American history, an economic crisis, and a restructuring of the healthcare system, because that's what the CARES Act did, with billions of dollars of subsidies for pharmaceutical companies and hospitals, which were necessary, but like it was this immense opportunity. Well, Marco Rubio was able to use that moment to deliver on a small business agenda that he's been working on. And a whole bunch of people were able to deliver on a bunch of experiments that they were doing in a bunch of other areas. And we've been able to deliver on antitrust work, but Bernie Sanders and the progressives, with a popular politician and lots of money, and they were able to do zero with Medicare for All. Not a single policy change happened. No experiments, nothing. Zero policy impact during this pandemic with Medicare for All. And that's because it's not a real political agenda. And it is time for progressives to wake up and start recognizing that they actually have run a losing strategy for 15 years, that they are not who they think they are, and that it is time to stop being babies and start to actually develop something that's real.
So someone who was not a baby was Laura Kelly in Kansas, who won her gubernatorial election. But I want to ask you about Thomas Frank's work that intersects with yours. What's the matter with Democrats? You're really saying, what the hell is the matter with Democrats' economic policies? What do you think with respect to the pandemic and the failure of public health leadership, whether or not that is an opportunity to reinvent the party?
There's always an opportunity. That's the thing, is that there's been such systemic failures for so long. It's always an opportunity. That's why I keep coming back to Cicilline and Pramila Jayapal. And because like when they actually were serious and they looked into the details of the like technology marketplaces, they had lots and lots of business people and small business people, you know, thousands of them coming forward being like, thank you for actually understanding how we work and how we're being taken advantage of. And that was for real. And so, you know, that's kind of what I mean. If you want to develop a real political agenda, it takes actual work. And it also means starting to ignore elections in favor of actually governing, because that's the other thing, is like progressives. And I hit on progressives because I think they're actually the biggest political problem we have right now. Progressives look at elections as the point of everything. And that's ridiculous. Elections are a means to an end, which is a good society. And instead of saying, let's start with thinking, like, what are we going to have for a good society? They start with, we need to have candidates who are activists or organizers or who make certain messaging, which is just ridiculous. You know, you have to start from the underlying premise of what do you want in your society? And like, we have this kind of weird sentimental romantic attachment to, you know, kind of this vague better world, like Green New Deal, which is just a slogan and a resolution that doesn't have any details. Like, we've got to stop that and develop a real political agenda. And I don't know exactly how to convey this because, you know, what progressives don't understand and what sort of Democrats don't understand in general is they don't understand how to think and how to do work. So I will just say, like, it's time to start actually looking into how business is done, not that you're anti-business or pro-consumer, but that there are splits within the business world and start to try to understand industries at a detailed level. And that's, I think, the traditional, like the anti-monopoly tradition and like the American tradition of actually structuring commerce in a fair way means actually going into these industries and understanding how they work and thinking about how can we apply better market structures to allow people to do business that isn't predatory, but is actually virtuous and good. How do we free business from the dead hand of monopoly capital? That's what we have to do.
Undercover boss at tutorial.
Undercover. I guess that's a good way to put it, actually. I'm sorry.
Just a final question.
I
know that you've urged caution with the conclusions about McConnell's defiance of election results or unwillingness to acknowledge them, you know, during this period of Trump fraud claims that appear to be fraud themselves. But you don't have concern that the Republican caucus and, you know, Republicans who've spoken either out of fidelity to Trump or just because they think they're going to get the axe if they don't sort of side with him on the fraud accusations. You don't think that there is a more nefarious plot?
Well, I think it's nefarious, right? Yeah. I think it's really bad to have one party saying we're not going to concede. But, you know, look, 2/3 of Democrats believe that Putin changed voting tallies. Like, you look at the polling, I mean, it's insane. And so when I look at the Republicans, I'm like, they're just doing what the Democrats were doing. Like, the Democrats never accepted that Trump won that election.
But bottom line, man, you don't think that they are either empowered or would. You think that Biden will be sworn in as the next president?
Yeah, of course. And the problem that I'm looking at is a slightly different problem than the one that I think a lot of Democrats see, right? When I look at the most likely route to an autocracy, I look at corporate monopolies because I see that corporate monopolies really since the 80s have really driven a much more autocratic political system. And so, you know, when I saw the massive foreclosure crisis happening in 2011 and 12, I wrote a paper on it called The Housing Crash and the End of American Citizenship, saying, if you take everyone's home or 10 million homes, people are going to get crazy. And that's indeed what happened. My sort of level of panic comes not from, you know, people in politics saying dumb things they don't mean, but from actually allowing real concentrations of power emerge to have like Jeff Bezos for $200 billion or whatever he's worth. That's actually where autocracy comes from, because it's the union of Jeff Bezos and whoever becomes a powerful political leader. That's what actually brings autocracy. The reason I'm so like dismissive of the Democrats and progressives who say, you know, Trump is an authoritarian and Hitler and all this stuff is because it's just not true. It's just nonsense. And it's designed to panic people into not developing a real political agenda. And I think the same thing is true on the right, that all of this voter fraud nonsense, it's designed to prevent them from actually understanding what Trump did wrong. And I think that that's like our main problem, which is that we have to stop getting so panicked about all of these like fantasy Hitler scenarios, which is really what the Democrats have been like peddling for 4 years. And it's just nonsense. We have to build a real political agenda. Now, we may get fascism, right? We may really get it. And I am scared of that. But the thing is that pretending that, you know, Trump is Hitler, which a lot of progressives and Democrats did to get attention, to pretending that is a lie and it prevents actually developing a coherent political agenda that can be appealing to voters and that can actually deliver on a lot of the really serious social problems that we face, including the emergence of authoritarianism.
Right. The reason that I mention Sanders and I add Liz Warren and being honest is because I think they would agree with your assessment that the Bezos wealth that you allude to being the cause of autocracy or authoritarianism, you know, you're saying they need to do work. There are progressive plans involving.
Let me just clear out what I mean by honest. Okay. Yeah. Obama was a bad president who did a bad job. Obama consolidated power and wealth because he thought it was the right thing to do. And it was a mistake. And Democrats should have voted him out of office in 2012. He was a bad president. And he is the reason that Trump got elected. And he is the reason that we are having so many social problems today. If you are going to be honest, like Donald Trump is a liar about many things, but he did immediately, you know, when he his first debate, he said George Bush was a disaster in a way that Democrats would never even say. 9/11 was a security failure. Iraq was a disaster, all these things. That's what I mean by dishonest.
Right. And like, but they do have some.
And Bernie Sanders won't say it. Not a single Democratic elected official will say Barack Obama was a bad president.
Like, right.
They won't say it.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. But they do. When I say honest, I mean, they do have some honest and concrete plans about dealing with the problem like Jeff Bezos.
But, you know, look, you can't lie your way into a change. Right. You have to be clear about what's going on. And like the reality is that if you accept like the reason that progressives became irrelevant is because they wouldn't actually be clear about what went wrong. So they lost all of their legitimacy and power, and rightfully so. Why would you trust these people? I wouldn't trust them. I don't think that they'll do a particularly good job if they're not willing to be honest about the main reason that we're in the situation that we're in.
What is the most effective way to deal with the wealth consolidation?
I think we have a big political problem. I think that Democrats have to acknowledge, I mean, you know, look, it's not that hard. The political agenda is, do you just tell people we're going to break up monopolies because they're stealing your wealth and your wages? We're going to, you know, and we're not driving up healthcare costs. We're going to put up tariffs because China keeps screwing us, and we're going to pull our troops out of the Middle East. This is not a hard agenda to convey. But what is hard to convey is you can trust me when I say I will do this. Right. Because people don't trust the Democrats. They don't trust the Republicans either, but they don't trust either party. And they don't trust them because we have proven to be untrustworthy. Obama made a bunch of promises in 2008 and he lied about them. And so people don't trust the Democrats anymore. And no Democrat will say, hey, maybe we shouldn't have lied about all that stuff. Right. So you have to actually to start to solve a problem. You actually have to admit there's a problem in the first place. And then this is why the Republicans are actually in a better place than the Democrats, because the Republicans know that they are represent the party of that they represent plutocrats, and they're trying to get out of that. Like Marco Rubio is like, we need to rebrand around a working class party, which means he knows that they aren't a working class party. And that's like a big part of discussion on the right, is they're like, how do we get the working class from the Democrats? Because right now we're a party that's run by libertarians. Now they at least understand that they have that problem. Whereas Democrats, you know, Nancy Pelosi is like, oh, we know our people, we feed them. Like, that's what she said to Wolf Blitzer. Like, it's a party of like Marie Antoinette's, and like, they don't even know it. And that's what's crazy. And like, progressives are in this like, you know, beta situation where they have to pretend like Democrats are, well, they didn't even pretend, maybe they believe it. They like actually believe that, you know, Democrats are like, are kind of, you know, maybe are kind of honest about what, or maybe they don't like the centrists or whatever, but like anything except, man, Obama really screwed things up. And by the way, Obama was really supported and beloved by progressives. So it's like, they're not willing to be like, yeah, progressives, we have a problem. Like, so if you don't acknowledge there's a problem, if Democrats won't acknowledge it and progressives won't acknowledge it, how are you going to solve it?
Matt Stoller, author of Goliath, the 100-year war between monopoly power and democracy, and research director at the American Economic Liberties Project. Thank you so much for your insight today.
Thanks a lot, man.